Javier said quietly.
It won't affect our work together, and we can pretend it never happened. But if there's even a tiny part of you that thinks this can work...
He swallowed.
I'm not saying we have to get married or jump into a long-term relationship, but I want us to let each other in. Doesn't have to go all the way to the rooms where we keep our secrets. Even the entrance hall will do for now.
My laugh broke free of its own accord. My God, that is the worst metaphor I've ever heard.
Hey, I never said I was a poet.
He gave me a crooked grin.
So, what do you say? They're just dates, Luna. We'll keep them discreet, and if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. No harm, no foul.
The responsible thing to do was shut this down once and for all. Nothing good could come of letting any man in, much less one as clever and charming as Javier. And saying yes went against my vow not to get involved with clients. But I would be lying if I said I felt nothing for him. Our kiss had made me feel more than anything else in recent memory, and I had the unsettling feeling that if I walked away, the what-ifs would haunt me for the rest of my life. I hope I don't regret this. 2 months. Effective immediately. Just saying the words made my chest tighten, but I pushed back the worst-case scenarios threatening to surface. We have until the end of December to determine whether this can go anywhere.
Like a trial period?
Yes. I lifted my chin. Do you have an issue with that?
Not at all.
Javier's grin deepened as he held out his hand.
We have a deal.
It was my last chance to back out, but fuck it. I hadn't come this far to chicken out now. I slid my hand into his and tried to ignore the swoop of butterflies in my stomach. We have a deal. Chapter 21. Sloane. I won't say I told you so, but I told you so, Isabella said. I knew you and Javier would eventually give in to your sizzling, delicious... Please stop. I'm in a cab and I'm going to hurl. I hope not, considering you're on your way to a first date. I could hear her grin over the phone. Have fun. Fill us in on everything later, and don't worry about the Perry thing. We got you. I hadn't forgotten about Perry Wilson's attempt to throw me under the bus. Since I was back in the city, I could focus on taking him down with some help from my friends. Thank you. The cab rolled to a stop. I'm here. Talk to you later. Ooh, send us a picture of... I hung up before Isabella said anything else inappropriate. I paid the driver and climbed the steps to Javier's West Village townhouse, the nerves in my stomach sprouting teeth and fangs. It was Saturday, 2 days after my questionable decision to say yes to casually dating him. Emphasis on the casual. Javier didn't tell me what he had planned, only that I should wear cozy clothing. And if it were anyone else, I would have balked the second he told me our first date was at his house. That was how charming serial killers lured their victims to their deaths. My showing up anyway was either a testament to how comfortable I felt with him or how stupid I was. Honestly, I preferred the latter explanation over the former. I lifted my hand, but the door opened before I could knock. Javier's tousled black hair and lean, sculpted body filled the frame, and I was beset by the strange sensation of my heart sputtering. He wore his version of cozy. Jeans and a fine cashmere sweater that outlined his broad shoulders and arms. No shoes. For some reason, seeing him barefoot at home felt unbearably intimate. I dropped my arm with a twinge of self-consciousness. Hi.
Hi.
His smile displayed a flash of his dimples.
Before you think I'm a creep who is waiting at the window, I came out to get this.
He picked up a small brown box from the front stoop.
You just happen to have perfect timing.
That's not a knife you bought to murder me in your secret basement, is it? The dimples deepen.
I guess you'll find out.
Funny. I hung my coat on the brass tree by the door and followed him deeper into the townhouse. I'd visited once before to drop off some papers, but never made it past the living room. Javier gave me a quick tour and explanation of each room we passed. Contrary to what I'd expected, his house didn't resemble a college fraternity's. It was surprisingly cozy despite its vast layout, and the coastal decor was a refreshing mix of soft whites, moody blues, and dusty yellows. He either had an excellent eye, an excellent interior designer, or both.
This is where I spend most of my time.
He gestured at the second floor den, which was part TV room, part library, and part home arcade.
It's the jack of all trades in the house.
Is that a claw machine? I walked closer to the metal container filled with stuffed toys. It occupied the far right wall between a vintage pinball machine and a retro popcorn cart.
Yes.
Javier rubbed the back of his neck, pink tinting his cheeks.
I hated those things when I was younger. I spent a fortune on them but never got the toy I wanted, so I installed this and rigged it so everyone who plays gets what they want.
The boyish explanation was so unexpectedly charming that I didn't bother hiding my smile. The scars from our childhood enemies run deep, I said solemnly.
Yes, they do.
Javier fixed me with a grave stare.
Don't get me started on Doris's old cat. She almost killed me and Hershey in our sleep once.
Hershey?
Childhood pet. He was a brown lab, hence...
The name?
Bingo.
A mental image of a young Javier with his dog popped up, and my heart melted the teensiest bit. Our date hadn't officially started, and I was already softening. What was wrong with me?
Did you have any pets when you were younger?
Javier's hand brushed mine when we left the den. Electricity sizzled up my arm, and I instinctively jerked it away. I smoothed a hand over my bun to hide the knee-jerk reaction, my heart pounding. I wasn't sure if he'd noticed, but a tiny grin played at the corners of his mouth as he led me past the third floor bedrooms and to the rooftop. No, I said a tad belatedly. My father doesn't like any animals except horses. I made a determined effort not to glance at any of the bedroom doors and picture what was behind them. What did Javier's room look like? His childhood bedroom in Bogota had been stripped and transformed into a generic guest suite. Did he display items from his travels? Artwork? Posters? If so, posters of what? But I have a temporary pet fish, I said, determined not to dwell on such silly questions. The person who rented my apartment before me left him behind. Javier opened the door to the rooftop.
What's his name?
The fish. He stopped and looked askance at me.
You named your pet fish. Fish?
The fish, I corrected. Articles of grammar are important. And like I said, he's a temporary pet. There's no use giving him a real name.
Right. How long have you had this temporary pet?
5 years. His laughter sent white puffs of breath into the chilly fall air.
I hate to break it to you, Luna, but once it passes the 1 year mark, pet ownership is no longer considered temporary.
I constructed a whole argument about how temporary didn't have a defined time limit. Therefore, if I'd adopted the fish with the intention of rehoming him one day, it was considered temporary regardless of how much time passed. However, the words died on my tongue when I stepped fully onto the rooftop and saw what he'd planned for our first date. Oh my God. A giant standing TV screen dominated one side of the rooftop, kitty corner to a table covered with every snack one could think of. There were white ceramic dishes filled with M&Ms, pretzels, gummy bears, and other candies I couldn't identify at this distance. Plates groaning with chips, cookies, and sundry snacks. Massive bowls containing 6 different types of popcorn, and a full charcuterie board. A champagne bucket sat next to tea, coffee, and 3 bottles of wine, one red, one white, one rosé. Beneath the table, a glass-fronted mini-fridge boasted an assortment of water, juice, and soda. Area rugs and potted plants scattered across the floor, lending the scene a cozy feel. Strategically placed candles and the canopy of lights overhead illuminated the rooftop in lieu of the setting sun, while portable heat lamps warded off the cold. However, the real star of the show was the giant mattress laid out in front of the screen, piled high with pillows, cushions, and cashmere blankets. It looked so cozy, I wanted to dive right into the middle and never get up. The entire setup was so cheesy, it looked like something out of a rom-com. And I loved it. Emotion prickled my chest. When was the last time someone put this much thought into something for me? My exes had taken me to expensive dinners and exclusive shows, which were nice, but they only cost money. Time and care required far more effort, and no one had ever deemed me worthy of those things.
Since it's Halloween, I figured we could do a double feature,
Javier said.
One witchy rom-com and one Christmas rom-com that doesn't release until the holidays. Friend of a friend is high up at the studio and pulled through for me.
For once, I didn't have a sarcastic reply. That, I cleared my throat of its hoarseness. That sounds nice. We filled our plates with food and settled on the mattress. He'd pushed it up against the low brick wall so we had back support, but a mountain of pillows softened the hard surface. The opening credits rolled across the screen. I tried to focus on the lead actors' names instead of Javier's presence. We weren't pressed against each other, but we were close enough that every time one of us moved, something grazed. His arm against my shoulder, his leg against my knee, his hand against my thigh. Moments of contact so brief they barely counted as touches, but so potent they wreaked havoc on my body. My entire right side tingled from his proximity, and awareness pulsed to life in my veins. We were on a New York rooftop in late October, and I was burning up. It wasn't because of the heat lamps or the blankets. It was because of him. I'm surprised you scheduled this for Halloween. I made conversation simply to divert attention away from the rapid patter of my heartbeat. Get a hold of yourself, for Christ's sake. There are dozens of parties tonight.
Those are boring. This isn't.
You would rather watch a rom-com about a witch and a plumber falling in love than attend a costume party with celebrities?
100%. As long as I'm watching it with you.
His answer came out so casually, it took a second to register. Once it did, the patter morphed into a full-blown marching band, drums and all. Damn him. Tonight was supposed to be an obligatory date. I wasn't supposed to like it this much. You know you have to actually give him a chance, right? Vivian's gentle reminder from our happy hour yesterday floated through my mind. Don't go through the motions waiting for the trial period to expire. It won't be fair to either of you. I hated when other people were right.
What about you?
Javier asked.
No Halloween plans with the girls?
No, they're with their families. A small pang hit my gut. Vivian and Dante took Josie to this Halloween thing at the zoo. Kai and Issa have a mode de vie event, and Dominic and Alessandra are at Valhalla's fall gala. Kai and Isabella technically weren't married yet, but they might as well be. I was the odd one out. I didn't mind it. I would rather be single and content than in a relationship and miserable. But there were slivers of time when I wondered how it would feel to exist in the world knowing there was someone who loved me totally, unconditionally, and wholeheartedly for who I was, instead of who they wanted me to be. Speaking of Dante, did you figure out why he's on the inheritance committee? I asked, eager to think about something, anything else.
No, I haven't spoken to him yet. I've been focusing on next week's meetings.
Javier's leg brushed mine again. And there was that stupid zing again. He glanced at me, the moving images on screen throwing his features into light, then shadow, then light again.
He did a lot of business with my father, so I assume that's part of the reason.
Maybe. I can ask Vivian.
Luna.
He gently hooked his pinky around mine beneath the blanket, and my knowledge of how to breathe evaporated.
This is a date. No more work talk.
Right. In and out. You know how to do this. Are you ever going to tell me why you call me Luna?
One day.
His dimples winked into view.
If you're really nice to me.
I tamped down a smile. I'm nice to you right now.
You forgot a word.
Really nice. What does that entail, a blowjob? My quip trailed off when I realized my mistake. Discussing blowjobs with Javier? Bad idea. Abort, abort. Alarm bells clanged in my head, but it was too late. Something intense swallowed the humor in his eyes, and my already scarce supply of oxygen dwindled to emergency levels. Neither of us was paying attention to the movie at this point. Unfortunately, that meant all my attention had rerouted to, one, the delicious warmth of Javier's body, which had inched close enough to short-circuit my brain, and two, a salacious mental gallery of images that revolved around me, him, and a certain activity with the initials BJ. My blood sang with sudden heat.
Perhaps, but not tonight.
His silky murmur ghosted down my spine.
I don't pass first base on the first date. What kind of man do you think I am?
You're telling me you've never done more than kiss someone on the first date? It wasn't a question, but the voice that delivered it was so breathless I didn't recognize it as mine.
I have, but that was years ago. We weren't dating and I wasn't trying to woo them.
Another type of warmth, one that had nothing to do with arousal, pooled in my stomach. Is that what you're trying to do? Woo me?
Depends.
A smile played on his lips.
Is it working?
Yes. No.
Liar.
A suitor shouldn't call the object of his wooing a liar. It's poor etiquette.
I'm honest when the situation calls for it, and you'd die of boredom if someone simply agreed with everything you said and did.
His pinky, still hooked around mine, curled just a bit tighter. I wished I minded. You think you know me so well, I whispered, even though he was right.
Only parts of you.
The gentle brush of his thumb against my hand unlocked a colony of butterflies in my stomach.
But we'll get there.
The implication that we would last until that point sent my defenses into overdrive. But the evening was so nice, and his touch felt so good, I ignored it. It was only when the witch movie ended and the Christmas one began that I realized I'd watched a rom-com without writing a review for the first time in 5 years.
Chapter 22. Javier. If I had my way, I'd spend the next 2 months focused solely on Sloane. We ended our movie date Saturday night with nothing more than a chaste kiss on the cheek. But it was the best damn date I'd ever had. She was warming up to me, and that was what mattered. I'll be honest, I wasn't used to chasing women. From the moment I hit puberty, I'd been inundated with female attention. Dating was easy, and sex was even easier, so this whole trial thing with Sloane was uncharted territory. Were it anyone else, I would simply let them go. But she wasn't anyone else. And I was already making plans for our next date. We had 2 months, so I needed to make the most out of them. Unfortunately, I had to deal with the pesky issue of my nightclub, namely securing the proper licenses, location, financing, and a million other things that came with starting a business. That was how I found myself in Valhalla again the Wednesday after my date, face to face with the man who could make or break my plans before they even started. Name number one on Kai's list. Vuk Markovic, also known as the Serb, sat across from me in his office, his eerie blue eyes devoid of emotion as I explained my idea. He'd eschewed the typical CEO uniform of a suit and tie in favor of a black sweater and pants. A brutal scar slashed his face into two halves, and a coil of burn scars wrapped around his neck. I tried my hardest not to stare. Luckily, it got easier when I hit my flow. I hadn't pitched a business plan since college, but I was a fast learner and a comfortable public speaker. I needed a partner for legitimacy, and Vuk was perfect for the job. He was the current chairman of Valhalla's management committee, which arguably made him the most powerful man in the city. He had over a decade of experience under his belt, and a sterling reputation for being fair but ruthless when the occasion called for it. Of course, he needed a compelling reason to go into business with me beyond a mutual acquaintance. Kai had gotten me in the door. It was up to me to close it. Markovic Holdings is launching its new non-alcoholic vodka next summer. The timing lines up perfectly with the Vault's launch, I said. I'd named the club The Vault after its hopeful location. We can host an exclusive preview and have a bespoke bar highlighting the drink. Sloane Kensington is in charge of the opening. It'll be the nightlife event of the season. Every tastemaker who matters will be there, and it'll be the first of our tastemaker series. The idea was simple. A monthly event series where attendees would receive early and/or exclusive access to everything from food to performances to fashion previews, all while sipping Castillo beer and Markovic alcohol. My family specialized in beer, but Vuk helmed a massive liquor empire that ranged from cheap wine any college student could buy to fine champagne so rare only a handful of bottles were produced annually. Next year, they were diversifying into the rapidly growing zero-proof alcohol sector, and the company was putting big money into making it a success. The signature tastemaker series would take place on a separate night from general nightclub revelry, but its purpose wasn't to draw regular parties. It catered to the media and influencers, who always liked being the first to try anything new. Their attendance, plus the ever-evolving nature of the events, would create fresh buzz every month and keep the club at the forefront of people's minds. At least, that was the plan. Vuk waited until I finished my spiel before firing rounds of methodical questions at me. Who are your competitors? Do you have a location under contract? Do you have any other brands or businesses lined up to participate in the Tastemaker series? How the hell will you pull all this off in less than 6 months? He didn't say the last part, but it was implied. Technically, he didn't say anything at all. The questions came in the form of written notes. No one knew much about him beyond his business dealings, but according to rumors, his nonverbalism wasn't due to medical reasons. Legend had it he'd once said thank you to a Valhalla attendant. He just really fucking hated talking. I addressed Vuk's concerns as best I could, but my confidence waned in the face of his unchanging stoicism. The Vault will be the biggest splash in New York nightlife since Legends, I said. I have the connections, the vision, and the drive. But at the end of the day, this business is about instinct. What works, what doesn't, what's the next big thing? You can't buy it or learn it. I leaned forward, keeping my eyes on his. I have it. And if you sign on as my partner, I'll make us into actual fucking legends. I devised the club as a way to fulfill my inheritance clause while sticking it to my father. But now that I had time to sit with it, I wanted to make it work. Not for money, family, or the world, but for myself. I wanted to prove I could do this. Vuk stared at me, his expression remote. I understood why most people crapped themselves when they were in the same room as him. There was something deeply unsettling about the Serb. Maybe it was a combination of his silence, his status, and his scars. Maybe it was something else entirely. Either way, nerves rattled in my veins when he started writing. He slid the paper across his desk less than 30 seconds later. Come back to me when you've secured a location. Damn it. Securing the location I had in mind was near impossible without Vuk as a partner. If that was a deal breaker, why the hell hadn't he said so before we scheduled this meeting? I swallowed my disappointment, thanked him for his time, and exited his office. On my way out, I passed by a dark-haired man with, holy shit, was that Ayana? Hey, is Vuk busy? The man asked. He must have seen me leaving the Serb's office. I masked my surprise. Very few people called Vuk by his first name out loud. He reportedly hated it. He wasn't when I left. The man nodded. Thanks. Ayana gave me a brief smile in passing. With her luminous dark skin and high cheekbones, the supermodel looked even more ethereal in person, but I felt a grand total of nothing, not even a flicker of lust or attraction. Sloane and I had kissed once, and she'd already ruined me for other women. I should be more alarmed at this development, but I found it hard to summon anything other than a smile when I saw her pacing the library. I'd signed Sloane in before my meeting with Vuk, and while I didn't need moral support, I loved having her there.
What did he say?
She asked when I came within earshot.
Or write. You know what I mean.
He said to come back to him when I've secured a location.
Name number two?
Name number two, I confirmed.
Shit.
My sentiments exactly. I had a meeting with the second name on Kai's list this Friday, and I wasn't looking forward to it. On the bright side, it wasn't a no. I'll get it done, I said. How are things going with PW? Sloane had filled me in on her plans to take down Perry Wilson. No arguments from me there. The gossip blogger was a massive pain in my ass.
They're going,
she said.
My friends planted the seeds. I'll take care of the rest. I was actually doing a little research for that before you came in.
Perfect. In that case, it's been a productive day and we can go to dinner. I needed to reset after my meeting with Vuk, and food always made me feel better. Sloane's mouth twitched.
Your sense of mealtimes needs recalibration. It's only 4.
By the time we fight through rush hour traffic, it'll be 5, which is happy hour time. You know what comes after happy hour.
A shower.
Dinner. My mouth curled into a grin. Though I'm not opposed to sharing a shower. I pitched my voice low enough for just her to hear. She went a teensy pink around her ears, but she cocked an eyebrow and asked,
What happened to slow and steady wooing?
Get your mind out of the gutter, Luna. All I proposed was sharing a shower. It'll be perfectly PG-13 except for the 2 very attractive naked people in it. Sloane's burst of laughter attracted several disapproving stares before she covered her mouth. My grin widened. If someone had asked me a year ago what my favorite thing in the world was, it would have been a cold drink on a hot beach. Now it was making Sloane laugh. Seeing her lower her guard and actually be herself never got old.
I'm sorry to disappoint, but there'll be no shared showers today or any time in the near future,
she said after she wrestled her amusement under control.
That...
Her phone lit with an incoming call, and a quick glance at the screen wiped the smile from her face. Sloane picked up, her skin going pale as she listened to whatever the caller had to say. A minute later, she hung up and grabbed her coat from the back of her chair.
I have to go.
Shimmers of concern threaded through my gut. What happened? I followed her to the exit and she didn't answer until we were in the hall, away from any prying ears.
It's my sister.
She finally looked at me, her eyes a storm of panic.
She's in the hospital. Chapter 23. Sloane. I didn't argue when Javier insisted on accompanying me to the hospital. He'd driven to the club today, and it was easier taking his car than hailing a cab. Rhea's stressed voice echoed in my head as we sped toward the hospital. My day off. Penny collapsed on the street. Hospitalized. She hadn't had time to fill me in on the details before a nurse called for her in the background. The lack of context sent my stomach into upheaval and my imagination spiraling down thorny paths. How badly was Pen hurt? Was this a broken limb or something worse? Would they have to operate on her? Dread clawed at my insides. I should have checked in on her earlier. It had been a month since London, and Rhea gave me the occasional text update. But I should have found time to sneak in a video call. Instead, I'd been buried in work and Javier. Logic told me Rhea would have been more distraught if Pen were in serious danger, but logic always cracked in the face of frigid, debilitating fear. Thankfully, Javier didn't ask questions or make conversation. He simply gunned through the streets, navigating jaywalkers and traffic with surprising dexterity, until we hit the gridlocked mess that was Midtown Manhattan during rush hour. The lights were green, but traffic was so backed up, no one could move. What happened? I straightened, trying to make sense of the snarl of cars, pedestrians, and bicyclists weaving through the intersection.
Looks like an accident.
Javier opened the driver's side, leaned out, and did a quick survey of our surroundings.
We're backed up for blocks.
Shit. My hands curled around the edge of my seat. We could be stuck here for hours, and I didn't have hours. What if Penn took a sudden turn for the worse? What if I missed out on seeing her for the last time by... No, don't go there. I fought for calm, Devolving into a hysterical mess wouldn't do anyone any favors.
I'll be right back.
Javier got out of the car fully.
If traffic somehow disappears in the next 5 minutes, my baby is in your hands.
He patted the top of his Porsche. What are you... I twisted around to watch as he walked down the line of cars behind us and knocked on the window of the last one. The driver rolled it down. Javier handed him something, and after a short exchange, the car reversed and turned onto a side street. Thankfully, there were only 3 cars blocking us, and Javier repeated this process with the last 2 until we were clear.
Change of plans.
He slid back into his seat and followed the other's lead in reversing and rerouting.
This next part might be bumpy.
What did you do?
Gave the drivers $300 each to go the opposite direction.
Javier frowned at the side street, which was also clogged.
Bribery works wonders.
We need to talk about the dangerous amount of cash you carry. Shit! I clutched the door's armrest, my heart leaping into my mouth as the Porsche swerved onto the sidewalk. This is not a road!
I'm aware.
He plowed forward, 2 of the wheels on the sidewalk and 2 on the street, past a queue of blaring car horns and angry curses.
There are no people walking here, and I can afford the fine.
You've lost your mind. Fuck! My heartbeat ratcheted up another notch when we nearly sideswiped a fire hydrant, and I didn't breathe until we finally, turned on a new street and returned to proper driving. As in, no sidewalk, only asphalt. The incoming rush of oxygen made me dizzy. Note to self, never get in a car with Javier behind the wheel again.
You need to get to the hospital. This is the fastest way we can get there,
he said calmly. He drove with 1 hand. The other closed around over mine, interlacing our fingers. I stiffened with surprise.
Don't worry, Luna. We'll make it.
I stared at his profile for a second before my gaze drifted to our intertwined hands. His was so large it engulfed mine, and so warm the heat radiated up my arm, through my chest, and into my stomach. He was focused on the road, and his act of comfort was a casual, unthinking one, but somehow that made it all the more intimate. Emotion climbed into my throat, thick and sudden. I missed sex because I hadn't had it in a month, but I hadn't realized how much I'd missed this. Non-sexual touches, easy intimacy, connection, in one form or another. Maybe it was because I hadn't had this in years, if I'd ever really had it at all. I faced forward and squeezed Javier's hand, letting his reassuring strength calm me. I didn't care about displaying vulnerability in that moment. I just needed someone to hold on to. Luckily, we didn't hit major traffic again, and we arrived at the hospital in relatively short order.
You go inside,
he said.
I'll look for parking.
I didn't argue. For a random Wednesday afternoon, the hospital was packed, but since I was family, I easily made it past the front desk. I checked my phone in the elevator. No new messages from Rhea, which I assumed was a good thing. Please let her be okay. The doors slid open. I ran out, turned the corner, and my stomach plummeted. George and Caroline stood in the hall, him in a suit and her in a designer tweed dress. Their backs faced me, but I would recognize them anywhere. I'd been so focused on seeing Penn, I hadn't considered their presence. Honestly, I wouldn't have been surprised if they hadn't shown up. They had a habit of ignoring her unless it was absolutely necessary. They were talking to a nurse and hadn't noticed me yet. Rhea, however, did. Our gazes locked before she deliberately turned, letting me take advantage of George and Caroline's distraction to slip into Penn's room. I'd deal with the fallout later. Right now, I needed to see her. Penn appeared to be sleeping, but she stirred when I closed the door behind me. She turned her head, her eyes widening with surprise. Sloan? Hi. I mustered a faint smile even as I frantically scanned her for signs of grievous injury. She looked so tiny in the hospital bed, but other than a giant bandage over her forehead, I didn't spot anything amiss. She didn't seem to have any broken limbs, bruises, or contusions. How are you feeling? I'm okay. Penn's voice was thin but steady. Don't worry. It's just a cut. Everyone's freaking out over nothing. What happened? I smoothed a hand over her hair. The knots in my chest loosened, but worry lingered in the spaces between them. It's so stupid, she grumbled, sounding her full 9 years of age. I fell and hit my head on the sidewalk. That's it. Pen? I leveled her with a stern stare. She heaved an aggrieved sigh. I crashed while Annie and I were taking a walk. I hit my head on the curb and almost got run over by a bicycle. I bit back a curse and a litany of questions. Annie was Rhea's backup whenever Rhea had the day off. She should have known better than to take Penn out at this time of day, when she was most likely to crash. Thankfully, it appeared to have been a mild crash, or she would have been knocked out instead of talking to me, but still. I smoothed a hand over her hair, my heart squeezing at how fine and delicate it felt. She was so young, and she'd already been through so much. But I'm okay. Penn's eyes drifted closed before she opened them again, her small face filled with determination. She always resisted sleeping when we saw each other. The selfish part of me was thankful for the extra time. The anxious part worried it made her crashes worse. Annie took me here just in case. I could guess why they'd put her in a private room so soon. My father had donated an entire wing to the hospital years ago. Where's Annie now? I asked. I don't know. She got fired. Penn looked down. Rhea left her niece's baby shower early to see me. Because she cares about you. We all do, I said gently. I glanced at the bandage again. It was a relatively minor injury, but even minor injuries could have intense effects on people with CFS. The recovery took longer, and the pain could intensify their symptoms. Do Mom and Dad know you're here? Penn's eyes were closing again. Not yet. Dread punctured my relief at the thought of confronting them. I'm glad you came. Her voice faded into nothing, and she was out. I lingered for a minute, savoring our last moments together. Penn and I had both changed since I left my family years ago. We were older, somewhat wiser, and more cognizant of what we were dealing with when it came to George and Caroline. But in some ways, we were the same, still trapped by our circumstances, still helpless to change them. The adrenaline from Rhea's call dissipated, leaving me with cold, hard clarity. The second I stepped into the hall, George and Caroline would know I'd been secretly seeing Penn. The only way I could have gotten here so quickly was if Rhea had contacted me, and the only reason I'd come so quickly was because I loved Penn. Considering she'd been 4 during our last known-to-them contact, it wouldn't take a genius to figure out we'd kept in touch over the years. Maybe I'd get lucky. Maybe George and Caroline wouldn't make a big deal out of it, and they wouldn't fire Rhea or lock Penn somewhere I couldn't get to her out of spite. Yeah, and maybe Satan will repent and give up ruling the underworld to become an elf in Santa's workshop. I was tempted to hide in Penn's room and wait for my family to leave before I slipped out. But from what I could see through the door window, that wasn't happening anytime soon. It would be infinitely worse if someone came in and found me skulking around. I was a lot of things, but I wasn't a coward. Whatever the consequences were, I'd deal with them. I only hoped I could shield Rhea from the brunt of the impact. She'd told me about Penn's hospitalization, knowing I would show up, and she'd probably get fired. She'd done it because she knew Penn would want to see me, and she didn't deserve to be let go over a moment of empathy. I steeled myself, walked to the exit, and opened the door. However, I barely crossed the threshold before I came to a dead halt. George, Caroline, and Rhea weren't the only people outside Penn's room anymore. The nurse was gone, and a slim, perfectly groomed blonde stood next to my father and stepmother. Beside her, a handsome man with brown hair and blue eyes looked around with a bored expression. This time, there was no sneaking past them. Their conversation fell silent as the door shut behind me, and my 4 ex-family members gaped at me with varying expressions of shock, disbelief, and confusion. "Well," the blonde said, recovering first, "this is a surprise." I suppressed a flinch. Her voice, lovely as it was, had the effect of burrowing into my skin and peeling the scabs off old wounds. Seeing him was worse. It was like having a Mack truck from the past blindside me from behind and send me flying. They were the only people who could still make me feel inferior and insignificant. My sister Georgia and Bentley, her husband, my brother-in-law, and my ex-fiancé. Chapter 24. Sloan. The harsh glare of fluorescent lights painted the hall in stark whites and shadows. Shoes squeaked, medical staff hurried past, and the smell of disinfectant clouded the air. None of that affected Georgia, who looked like a modern Grace Kelly who'd just stepped out of the pages of Vogue. "Don't tell me you called yourself Penny's family at the front desk so they'd let you up," she said. "That's a tad ironic, isn't it?" Her skin glowed in a way that shouldn't be possible beneath the unflattering lighting. She wasn't showing yet, and her cashmere sweater and Italian wool slacks fit her Pilates-toned figure like they were custom-made, which they likely were. A 4-carat heirloom diamond dazzled from her ring finger. It was the same ring Bentley had proposed to me with. Acid gnawed at my gut, but I met George's gaze with contempt. "Pen is family," I said. "She was 4 at the time. She shouldn't be held responsible for the poor decisions made by adults in her life." "Penelope is a Kensington," Caroline said coldly. "You are no longer a Kensington in anything but name, which means she's not your family. You have no right to be here." "That's rich, coming from someone who pretends she doesn't exist half the time." I returned her glare with a chilly smile. "Don't stay too long, Caroline, or people might mistake you for an actual mother." "You little—"
"Caroline."
My father placed a hand on her arm, reining her in.
"Don't."
My stepmother sucked in a deep breath and touched the strand of diamonds around her neck. Her glare didn't ease, but she didn't finish her attack either. George turned to me, his expression unreadable, and pieces of my bravado melted away like iron tossed into a fire. It was our first face-to-face encounter since our estrangement. If seeing Bentley was akin to getting hit by a truck, seeing my father was like getting trapped in the sands of time. Every shift of grain evoked a different memory. The timbre of his voice as we walked through Central Park Zoo for my 7th birthday, and he pointed out the different animals to me. The proud smile on his face when I was presented at my debutante ball. The shock when I told him I was starting my own PR firm instead of settling down and popping out babies like I should. The defensiveness when I accused Georgia and Bentley of sleeping together behind my back. The fury when I refused to take their relationship in stride and give them my blessing. And finally, the utter coldness when he gave me his ultimatum. "If you walk out that door, there's no coming back." The weight of our history crushed my lungs. Emotions surged through me in a jumble of old anger and fresh nostalgia. And it took everything I had not to turn and run away like the coward I prided myself on not being. I'd had many years to imagine what our first post-estrangement meeting would be like. They ranged from ignoring one another, most plausible, to a tearful, joyful reunion, least plausible. Confronting each other outside my sister's hospital room after she'd almost died was so implausible that it landed fully outside that range.
"Sloan?"
My father might as well be talking to his driver for all the emotion he showed.
"How did you know Penelope was here?"
The bitter pill of disappointment cracked on my tongue. What had I been expecting? A hug? I forced myself not to look at Rhea. "I got a message from Annie." I felt bad about throwing her under the bus, but she was already fired. Rhea wasn't, and Penn needed her. Plus, I doubted my family would check with Annie. Once they fired someone, that person didn't exist to them. Caroline's eyes narrowed. You've never met that woman. That you know of. I arched one brow. How would I know who she was otherwise? Penelope could have told you. She could have, but she didn't. This is ridiculous. My stepmother redirected her glare toward my father. George, kick her out. She stopped being a Kensington the day she humiliated this family by leaving it. My God, the number of whispers I had to endure during my charity meetings after that. And she, you can't kick me out, I snapped. This is public property. You don't own the hospital, no matter how much money you donate to it. Perhaps not, but we can get a restraining order against you for lying to the hospital staff and intruding on a private family affair. You can certainly try. My—
Enough,
my father thundered. Caroline and I lapsed into mutinous silence.
This is neither the time nor place to engage in petty squabbles.
He turned the full force of his flinty gaze on me.
Sloan, you are legally a Kensington,
he said.
But you gave up all rights to participate in this family the day you walked out of my office. That includes contacting Penelope in any way, shape, or form. I made that clear.
My nails dug into my palm. She's a kid, and she needs someone who— just—
What she needs is none of your concern. You have no more claim on her well-being than a stranger on the street.
Disappointment shadowed his face.
We could have solved this. I gave you an opportunity to make amends, and you ignored it. The consequences are yours to reap.
His dismissal fell like an axe blade, severing my power of speech. The beginnings of a storm brewed behind my ribcage, but as always, it was all sound and no fury. No rain, no tears. Just an endless, ceaseless pressure that yearned to break but couldn't.
Rhea, go inside Penelope's room and stay there,
he said.
If anyone except myself, Caroline, Georgia, Bentley, or hospital staff try to enter, call security and let me know immediately.
Yes, Mr. Kensington, she said quietly. She flicked a worried glance at me before she hurried past and disappeared into the room.
The doctor says Penelope is doing fine and in no danger,
my father told Georgia and Bentley.
Stay if you'd wish. I'm heading back to the office.
And I'm meeting Buffy Darlington at the plaza. Caroline gathered her coat tight around her. We have a silent auction to plan. Neither acknowledged me nor checked on Penn on their way out. I wasn't surprised they'd ignored me, but the way they bypassed Penn pissed me off. I guessed I should have expected it. Their parenting style was best described by the phrase, doing the bare minimum. My blood hummed with the aftershocks of our confrontation. After years of picturing the moment, it had been both overwhelming and underwhelming, but it wasn't over yet. I did not expect to see that show today. Georgia tilted her head. What did Daddy mean when he said he gave you an opportunity to make amends? Next to her, Bentley remained silent. He hadn't said a word since he saw me, which was for the best. If he opened his mouth, I'd punch him in it, twice. He emailed me about your pregnancy. I smiled over the churn in my gut. I shouldn't have eaten that chicken salad for lunch. I would say congratulations, but I'm the only person here who doesn't lie. Bentley had the grace to redden. Georgia didn't. That's okay, she said with maddening calm. The new townhouse Daddy bought us is congratulations enough. He's thrilled he's finally getting a grandchild. Speaking of which, are you still single? She glanced at my bare ring finger, her patronizing tone grating against my already raw nerves. I can't imagine why. Forget punching Bentley. I was inches away from punching my sister in her perfect, heart-shaped face.
Neither can I.
The velvety interjection draped over me like a protective blanket.
That's why I asked her out before those other idiots beat me to it.
Warmth brushed my side. A second later, a strong arm wrapped around my waist, drawing me closer and grounding the storm brewing inside me. Only one person had the ability to do that. Javier Castillo. Georgia straightened, her gaze sweeping over his tousled dark hair and sculpted body. He wasn't the preppy boarding school type she'd always gravitated toward, but he exuded a raw sensuality few could match. That, plus his family's fortune was triple that of Bentley's. I tensed, something green and ugly slithering through my veins at the way my sister eyed him. Beside her, Bentley stiffened and placed a possessive hand on George's hip. She ignored him, her eyes sliding to Javier's arm around my waist. "You're dating Sloane?" Her question swam with disbelief.
"Yep,"
he drawled.
"I chased her for months, but she finally agreed to go out with me."
He dropped a kiss on the top of my head.
"Sorry that took so long, babe. Parking was a nightmare, and the front desk initially refused to let me up because I'm not family. How's Pen?"
"A bit banged up, but she'll be okay." I leaned into him, playing up the girlfriend act. We technically weren't lying. We were dating, albeit more casually than Javier made it seem. "Thank you for coming here with me." That was 100% honest.
"Anytime, Luna. I'll always be here for you."
I glanced up, my heart stilling for a split second at the sincerity in his eyes. It surprised me no matter how many times I saw it, and it scared the hell out of me. I knew how to deal with fake people. I interacted with dozens of them every day. But genuine people were rare, and they slipped past my defenses in a way that could be disastrous. Then again, it might be too late where Javier was concerned. Bentley cleared his throat, derailing my train of thought and dragging our attention back his way.
"Aren't you his publicist?"
he asked, earning a sharp glance from Georgia. My client list wasn't a secret, but it was interesting that he was so familiar with it.
"Seems like a violation of professional ethics to date a client."
I stared at him. Shit. Bentley wasn't wrong, but I wasn't going to explain the nuances of our situation to him. To be honest, I feared that once I went down that road and passed all my justifications, I'd find no good reason for dating Javier other than I wanted to. He was the kryptonite to my logic, my inhibitions, my rationality, and everything else I relied on to keep me out of quagmires like this one. Similarly, I'd gotten so caught up in wiping the smug look off George's face that I forgot we were supposed to be keeping our relationship low-key in public. We weren't hiding it, but we didn't flaunt it either. We didn't want to give the city's gossip network any fodder. "Who I date or how I run my business is none of your concern," I said coolly. "I'd tell you to mind yours, but you don't have a business of your own, do you?" A small tilt of my head. "It's sad that your family can't buy you deals the way they bought your admission into Princeton." Flags of color burned high on Bentley's cheekbones. He worked in private equity like his father, but he'd gotten the job mostly because of his connections. He also hated reminders about being waitlisted at Princeton. The only reason he'd gotten off the list was because his family donated a building. "This is absurd," Georgia said. Without our father or my relationship status to use against me, she'd clearly lost interest in the conversation. "We won't stand here and let you insult us. Come on, Bentley, let's go. We have dinner reservations at Le Boudoir." They didn't say a word about Penn before they left. That was my family in a nutshell. Great at surface-level sentiments like showing up, shitty at actual sentiments like following through. Honestly, I was surprised Georgia had showed up at all. She and Penn tolerated each other at best and rarely spent time together. Georgia didn't care for children, which was concerning since she was pregnant, and Penn thought she was too narcissistic. I didn't know where she'd learned the word narcissistic, but she wasn't wrong.
"You have such a wonderful family,"
Javier said after Georgia and Bentley were out of earshot.
"I can't imagine why you don't want to talk to them."
I huffed a small laugh. "Yeah, me neither." Now that my family was gone, the string of defiance that had kept me upright collapsed. My shoulders sagged as adrenaline leaked from my pores, leaving me heavy and exhausted. I stepped out of Javier's embrace and sank into one of the chairs lining the hall outside Penn's room. I stared blankly at the opposite wall, my emotions a wreck after the surprise encounter with my family. Sometimes I wished I were the type of person who could forgive and forget. If I swallowed my hurt and anger and pretended I was happy for Georgia, that might actually be true one day. Fake it till you make it and all that. If my sister had been a good sister, and her betrayal with Bentley were a one-off, I could be tempted to consider that route. But Georgia had never been a model sibling. She was used to being the center of attention and getting whatever she wanted. Often, what she wanted was what she couldn't have. The one-of-a-kind porcelain doll my grandmother had gifted me for my birthday, our mother's vintage dress for her debutante ball, and, of course, my fiancé. She'd put up such a fuss about the doll and dress that my father redistributed them to her. As for Bentley, he bore a fair share of the blame. I believed in greater accountability for the cheater than the person they cheated with, but in their case, they could both jump off the Brooklyn Bridge. I heard a small rustle of clothing as Javier sat next to me. He'd let me process silently, which I was grateful for, but I couldn't stay catatonic forever. Thank you. I turned my head to face him. You didn't have to do that.
Don't know what you're talking about.
He lounged in his seat, the position reassuringly familiar against the impersonal hospital walls.
I merely told the truth like I always do.
Right. What did you tell the front desk to get them to let you up?
Nothing.
Javier's grin twinkled with mischief.
I let Benjamin do the talking. 5 Benjamins, to be exact. I may have also told them I was your fiancé.
That has to be illegal. And you have to stop walking around with so much cash. It's unsafe.
Unsafe?
He shifted, his knee grazing mine.
Don't tell me you're starting to care, Luna.
Starting? No. I'd passed starting weeks ago. I just hadn't known it at the time. A rush of anxiety shot through me. Admitting I cared was akin to getting my teeth pulled out with pliers. But he'd been honest with me about his feelings. I should be honest with him, to an extent. Javier's grin dimmed as the implication of my reply hit. Surprise flashed through his eyes, followed by a slow, molten warmth.
Then we're on the same page,
he said softly. Some of my anxiety abated. I guess we are. We sat in silence for a while, watching nurses rush past and strangers come and go. Hospitals bled tears, but it was comforting in a way. It reminded us that we weren't alone in our grief, and that the universe wasn't targeting us. Shitty things happened to everyone. It was a strange comfort, but it was a comfort nonetheless.
Is Penn really okay?
Javier asked. Yes. I got to see her for a bit before she crashed and I ran into my family. I picked a piece of lint off my pants. My father and stepmother were here. They left before you came.
I saw them on my way up.
His voice gentled.
How was that?
It was how I expected it to be. The Kensingtons remained divided. My mouth twisted into a sardonic smile. What did you think of my sister and her husband? Charming, aren't they?
That's not the first C word that came to mind.
A small laugh sliced through my turmoil. I didn't know how he did it, but Javier had a talent for making horrible situations tolerable.
There seemed to be some tension between you and Bentley,
he said.
Beyond your antagonism with your sister.
If he ever gave up the nightclub gig, he should join the FBI. Javier was terrifyingly observant. There would be, I said, considering he was my fiancé before he married my sister. His shocked eyes snapped up to meet mine, and my smile grew more bitter. Not a lot of people knew about us, I said, at least not in New York. I'd never told anyone the full story, not even my friends. They knew bits and pieces, but rehashing the memories was too painful. I'd rather lock them in a box and pretend they didn't exist. However, seeing Bentley again had ripped the lock right off, and I needed to share them with someone before I drowned in them. We met when we were both studying abroad in London, I said. I was a junior, he was a senior, He stayed there for a job after graduation, and we dated long distance for a bit.